Welcome to What CEOs Talk About. Do you wonder what CEOs talk about behind closed doors? How they bring their vision to reality? How do they overcome and succeed through adversity? We share that and so much more with each episode. Now, let's get started with the show.
Hello, everybody. My name is Martin Hunter. I am the host of What CEOs Talk About. You can hear in my voice that I've been fasting because all I can do is talk fast. So I'm just giggling at that. Before we start, a little bit from our sponsors. We have three sponsors today. We have Urgio, we have STS Capital Partners, and we have UltraVest. Sam, do you know or have you ever exited a company, sold a company?
I have not.
Do you know anybody who has?
I do know people.
Was it a good experience or a shitty experience?
It is almost always a shitty experience.
Almost always. What? So think of one or maybe two. And what was shitty about the experience?
I think it's just... the entire experience is kind of convoluted. It's complicated. And then in addition to that, you have, it's long, I think. The exact details, I don't know, but it was one of my very good friends who exited. He was happy in the end, but just the whole thing took probably years off of his life. So
I look 50, but I'm actually 22. No.
That's right.
So the first partner is STS Capital Partners. So what they do is they make small to medium enterprise exits very fun, attractive, and not as demanding. So there's a lot of things that the founder did when he exited because he had an awful exit. And I shouldn't say awful exit. It was very demanding and, like you said, kind of felt shitty. And there's a lot of money left on the table because they had to go through banks and a lot of stuff like that. So if you're a small, medium enterprise and you want to exit, STS Capital Partners, they'll take you through it. They're kind, they're compassionate, they think about you first. That's really the good thing. So that's the first one. The second one is now that you've gone with STS Capital Partner, they've given you almost double of the valuation that you had before. What do you do with the money? You've bought a chopper. You've bought the big boat. You've got everything. Philanthropy comes into mind, right? What do I do? How do I help? So UltraVest really helps the underserved, non-for-profit. You can go check them out. Okay. So third sponsor, you want to sell your business. You're not meeting the qualifiers. You call Urgio. Urgio has got a program called Ready to Exit where we help your company with three different areas, right? So there's finance, growth, and optimization. So either you're kind of stagnant, you've done good with sales, you want to go up, you need to do mergers and acquisition if you want to grow your business. You're leaving a lot of profitability because you're not as optimized as possible. We do that. And then all of a sudden you become very attractive by having a good value flow to the customer. So thank you very much for our sponsors. We've got Urgio, STS Capital Partners, and UltraVest. With that out of the way, let's get to the meat. Sam, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I am super excited to speak with you today, Martin.
Thank you for that. Sam, what... So in the pre-show, I think we came up with a good title. What is the title of this episode?
The title of the episode is Escaping the Golden Handcuffs.
Da, 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 da. All right. Before we jump into it, tell us, Sam, who are you? What made you you? What do you do for a living? So tell us a little bit about your story way back when. And then all the way to today and where we are today.
Sounds good. Yeah. I am a humble Canadian, Taiwanese Canadian, living in Vancouver, British Columbia. And I was born in Taiwan. My family came to Canada when I was 2 years old. And growing up, I was actually bullied a lot. Because believe it or not, I mean, here in Vancouver now it's like, you know, we're the majority now. Mm-hmm. But before it wasn't. And I think, you know, I was, there's a little bit of racism, there's a little bit of bullying, but growing
up, don't have to say a little. You can say there's racism, there was bullying.
Yeah.
It's despicable, and it should be identified for what it is. So
for sure. And you know, and so growing up, I was a very shy kid, and I remember when I entered university. So I went to the University of Western Ontario, which used to be called University of Western Ontario. It's called Western University now. My very first sales job, I was actually working for American Express, selling credit cards for the phone. And I remember when I first joined that job, I sucked. Like, I was so bad. It was like, I was god awful, destructive. And I remember first month, there was, I walked into the onboarding class. There's 30 people in the onboarding class. And out of the 30 people at the end of the first month, I was the bottom of the food chain. I sold like maybe two cards the whole month. And I remember I was like, man, I suck. And at that time, I don't know if you know the movie Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
But the movie Wolf of Wall Street just came out at the time. And I was like, and I remember watching a scene from the movie Wolf of Wall Street, and it was like Jordan talking over the phone. He was like, hey, John, how's it going today? This is Jordan calling from blah, blah, blah. And he was like, Aero Times, a high-tech firm out of the Midwest, blah, blah. And he was like selling garbage to garbage. And that scene, that cold call scene, I saw it and I got so inspired. I'm like, man, I'm like, if he could sell that to like rich people, I'm like, if he could teach, you know, his bunch of smucks to sell, you know, stocks to rich people, I'm like, I could learn this. So what I did was I took that cold call scene in the movie. I took every word on that cold call scene. I found the YouTube clip. I wrote that script from the movie, like word for word from the movie, on a sheet of paper, line piece of paper. And then I rewrote my American Express script to that script, the movie script. And I was like, hey, John, how's it going today? My name is Sam, calling from American Express from London, Ontario. You don't know me. I don't know you. But what this card will do is act as a benchmark for future purchases so you can make a return on the money that you spend, blah, 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 blah.
And you still remember the pitch? Awesome.
I still remember the pitch. The next day, I took that script to work, and that day I sold two cards. Blew my mind. I was like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I can learn sales? I'm like, what is this? What is this thing? And you know how, like, when you were a kid, like, you always wanted a superpower. You're like trying to move things with your mind. And And I remember as a kid, I'm like, well, not as a kid, as an adult, but at the time learning sales. Sales is like, that's like a superpower. Like, you can get people to do things that you want them to do through just communicating. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So anyways, long story short, my very first commission-based sales job, I was a meat salesman. So I went door-to-door and I sold beef, chicken, pork door-to-door. I sold $3,000 to $5,000 freezer packages. You know how people buy half of the pork, half of the cow. So I remember going out, and it was a company called Nutrifarms in London, Ontario.
Yeah.
And I sold meat door-to-door. And I remember on my fourth day on the job, I broke the company record. I made almost $2,000 that day. And that day changed my life because I was on a Saturday and they paid me in cash. So I had a bunch of cash in my hand. And I remember on my
Saturday. And how old were you then?
I was 19.
19 with $2,000 in your pocket. You're like, right. What do I go? What do I do?
This was more money that I had in my bank account in cash. I felt like a drug dealer. I went home. And I remember I was like, I was on a Saturday. On a Monday, I was sitting in class. I was sitting in business 2251. And I was sitting there and I turned to my friend Simon. I remember this moment so vividly. I turned to my friend Simon. I'm like, Simon, how much do you think this prof makes? And he's like, I don't know, like $80,000. I'm like, no way. I'm like, professors make like $300,000. Easy. Mm-hmm. Like, they're professors. Come on.
Yeah.
And he goes, no. Like, I don't know, I think they make like $60,000-$80,000. I looked this up. Her name, Shannon. That literally, I still remember it. I looked it up, like, there in class, and she made like somewhere around $80,000. I'm like, why am I here?
Yeah.
I'm like, I could go and do what I did on Saturday every day for 20 days. Oh, sorry, for 40 days, and then just take the rest of the year off, and I make more than this professor. I'm like, why am I here learning a skill where I can later on go trade that skill for more? It just didn't really make sense to me. So, anyways, long story short, dropped out of school. When I was 19 years old, flew cross country. I started a door-to-door sales job selling telecom, home phone, TV, internet. Started working for a multi-billion-dollar corporation, construction corporation. And we sold TELUS, which is one of the large big four telcos here in Canada. And basically through that, I climbed the corporate ladder. I kept climbing, I got promoted. Every 6 months, basically, I got a promotion. Then I became the director of training and development at Ledcor. And then after that, the company, we didn't really vibe. And so I left. And after I left, then I did a little bit of consulting. And then during the pandemic, I actually sold masks, believe it or not. I literally called up Chinese factories, guys speak Mandarin. I was like, hey, look, I know a ton of American hospitals and American government officials. I can get you some good contracts. I didn't, but I just thought I'd cold call them later. Yeah. So I was like, hey, look, I'm looking to lock up some supply agreements. So I did. And then I cold called American hospitals. I literally cold called their main company line. I'm like, hey, I'm looking for a procurement department. And I get in touch with the procurement director. And then through that, I was brokering deals through the pandemic. After the pandemic was when I started my current company, which is VT Member, and essentially we're a virtual assistant company. We do everything from data entry, cold calling, appointment setting, graphic design, video editing, web development, anything virtual you can think of, we do, except we do for $8 an hour. And that's essentially what we do. And we have a very unique system because we designed the entire, our business with not only the consumer, the business owner in mind, but our employees in mind as well. So every team member has a career progression plan, and every assistant that my client hires actually has a manager attached to the hip to keep the team member accountable. And so essentially when you hire one team member, you get two, you get a trainer and you get a virtual assistant, right? And that supports the business. And the virtual assistant has the ability to get promoted into a virtual trainer, which means they can grow their income, which means there's a career progression plan, which is also the reason why our attrition rate in the industry is probably the lowest and our quality of work is quite high. So that's a little bit about me.
Dude, how connecting brokering deals? Let's call China. That is being able to cold call is more than a superpower. I think you've got courage that a lot of people don't have, and they're so afraid of getting a no, which is unbelievable, which is that's so cool. That is so cool.
I truly think that being desensitized to no's is the single factor that will help you be successful in the entrepreneur, honestly, in every industry. Being desensitized to the word no and rejection, honestly and genuinely, is the single most important factor, I believe.
The thing that I talk to a lot of my team about rejection in sales, and even my kids, is, do you remember last time you said no? They go, no. I agree. Exactly. Who did you say no to does not phase your life whatsoever. If you think that you're important in this world, take a hard look. You're important to us because we're your parents, because we love you and we have no choice. But but my point is that nobody gives a shit about you. And I mean that in the nicest term. There's a lot of people that care about you, Sam, that care about me, Martin. I get that. But out of 7 billion people, there might be, 20, 30 people that really, truly care about you? And
truly care. Yeah.
Truly care. I don't think there's 30 people that truly care about me. No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't even know if my wife truly cares about me, but that's she's used to it. My point being is that the people that you've learned, Sam, and I think you're a great example for that, is I'm going to call China. What do you got to lose? A little bit of your time.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. And they're going to say, this guy called me. They don't even know your name. They don't even know what you look like. Mm-hmm. Who gives a shit, right? So good on you. I think there's a lot to be learned on that in regards to don't think so highly of yourself that you actually make a difference when somebody says no to you.
Yeah, that's right. And you know what? It's also I think as you do business, it's also a cost benefit analysis. When I called China, it wasn't just randomly calling.
Oh, yeah.
I came in. There's so many stories I could tell you, Martin. While I was doing the mass trades, there's this entire underground community during COVID that was trading PPEs that there's this particular mask, like the it's called the 3M 1860s. That particular mask has cost maybe 20 cents to produce. That was trading in China, like between like China and Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. That was trading for more than $8 US at one point. It was trading like Bitcoin. And so there were so many people like me who like jumped into the industry and was like brokering deals and like trying to call people. I had an edge because I could speak Mandarin, but some of the, we call them IMFPAs, irrevocable master fee protection agreements. On some of those IMFPAs with my name on it, like if those deals had went through, like I can't even tell you, like the commissions, the commission amounts, like we were talking volumes of like 20 to 50 million masks. And the commission amounts were like between like 20 cents to like $1.20 split between like three people, stuff like that. It was like wild.
Mind blowing
numbers. Yeah. So I was like, at that point, like, yeah, you might have fear speaking with like people, but like, if you don't try, like you will regret it for the rest of your life. Like what if those deals?
That is 100% true. That's the other side of the coin is what if. Right. What if you don't do it, you're going to regret it all your. Oh, I remember when I could have done. I could have been. But you didn't. So piss off.
That's right.
All right. So entrepreneurial. You go into the corporate world and they go, Sam's the best. Sam's the king. You know, everybody vote for Sam. You're getting pushed up because you got great skills. Right. And know you're as much as your skills are celebrated and encouraged, you're missing something. There's something missing, right?
Yeah.
So what was that trigger that went, oh man, one, I feel chained up and how do I break out of these chains? What was that kind of thought process?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So in the corporate world, I mean, first of all, it is not unnatural that you work 60, 80 hour weeks. Now, as an entrepreneur, I know when you first start your business, you work more than 80 hour a week. You're like, 60 hour a week? What is that? Like, yeah, what are you? Like an amateur? No.
Like, you was.
Yeah, exactly. I think the moment for me was this. Let me give you a little bit of context around this.
Please.
So I was 22 years old. 22, 23. Okay. And I was young. I drove a nice car. I lived in a nice apartment. Everything was all going good. And I was making around $150,000 a year, average, as a 22-year-old at that time. And that for me, for a lot of 22-year-olds, that's pretty good.
That's a status that you're in. You know, the top 1% of at 22. That's a status. That's an achievement on its own.
And so I was managing a team of almost 80 people. And we were doing door-to-door sales. And I remember the moment for me, those two moments. I'll talk about the first moment. The first moment was when they cut my pay in half. And the way that they did that was, remember the $150,000? $50,000 was my salary. $100,000 was my override, my commissions that I made on my team. And so they positioned it as a promotion. So essentially what they did was they actually promoted me to do a business turnaround in another business unit. They raised my salary to $75,000 and then gave me bonuses. But little did I know they were going to give me profit sharing on a business that was failing. Remember, it was a business turnaround. So I, being 22, 23, never
naively
a situation like this, never really negotiate a situation like this. Didn't know I can like even reject a promote, like reject. I walked into it. I was like, oh great, I'm promoted. You know, $75,000 is going to great help with like my overall salary, so my mortgage, blah blah blah. Walk into it and just realize after like a couple of weeks that I was like totally screwed. Like I was working way more, except now I was making a lot less. And in that moment was the moment where I realized like your freedom and like your income, it can be taken away like this in a corporate world, because businesses change so quickly and they could just let you go like that and it's gone. Everything that you've ever worked for. And me, I dropped out of school. That I had no background, no degree, like nothing. And so I was like, man, like that, like it could be taken away just like that. And so that's the first moment. The second moment was this, and the second moment, I'll preface it a little bit. The second moment was when I was in the corporate. We called it a regional summit. It happened every quarter, and they took all the regional managers, all the senior regional managers, directors, VPs, everyone, put them in a room, and we did a regional summit. We had a conversation. I remember the general manager who was running the meeting had one slide up, and that slide said, "How do we make our business better?" I remember it so vividly, and I remember. And pardon my language, like literally every single time we had these regional summits, we called them like amongst all like the directors and like the senior regional managers, we all call it like a circle jerk because everyone was like trying to like one up each other, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, the moment that slide went up, everybody was just talking over each other. I remember putting my hand up and waiting there for like a good like 20 minutes probably. Like nobody saw me. I was just like putting my hand up. I was waiting. And when it finally got to me, because people saw me and was like, "Hey, Sam wants to say something." When it finally got to me, I asked the general manager and I directed him. I'm like, "Hey, this is senior regional manager. He's a general manager, right?" The senior regional manager reported to the general manager. I said to the general manager, I was like, "Hey, look, I'm just going to call him Bob." Okay. Mm-hmm. I was like, "Hey, Bob, do you care about the senior regional manager? Let's call him James." I was like, "Bob, do you care about James enough? And you care about his future enough? That if you knew he had an opportunity outside of this company, you knew it was better for him, but you knew it would hurt you, what would you do? Would you convince him to leave?" That's the question I asked him. Would you convince him to leave? And you know what he said to me? He said, "Do you want me to answer that now?" And in my mind, I was already like, that moment was a moment where I was like, you know what? Like this is not the place for me.
Yeah.
Because the way that I responded, I told him, because the answer to that question is going to determine the answer for that question.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how do we make our business better? That's going to be a determining factor. And that was the moment when I was like, you know what? Like, this isn't for me. Because I found myself, like, not only being trapped, but it's like I found myself, like, my personality morphed into, like, a dog-eat-dog type of personality. Mm-hmm. Now it's like anybody come to me and ask me for help, I'm like, yeah, like, let's go. Like, I'm happy to help you. Right. But back in the day, oh my gosh, like people became disposable. Like I felt like my personality, like it wasn't even just the golden handcuffs. It was like, I felt like who I was like changed, you know? So those were the two moments.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I lived a similar situation when we were living in Toronto. So come back, I was in the mining industry and came back to Toronto for a small stint, and I was living in Mississauga, and so I had to commute in the train, and I would see this rat race, and there's this tall gentleman who went to put his backpack on, and as he turned around, he almost hit this lady in the face, and I put my hand up. He said, "Hey, don't touch my bag." I said, "Sorry, as you were turning around, you almost hit the lady in the face." He just looked at her and walked out. The guy had lost all humanity, and the only thing that he was doing is getting on the train, going to work, getting back on the train to get home. So that for me was like, you know what, I don't know if I want to keep on working. And like you, you know, I had top of the food chain, director of global emergency response and crisis management, had a big office, you know, Bay Street, and I don't know. I don't know. But the biggest step, I think, that for people as we talk about breaking the chains is I think a lot of people are afraid. They go, okay, great. I've escaped. I'm fed here. So think about the prison, right? So I'm fed. I'm lodged. I've got people to talk to. What do I do when I leave? Who am I going to talk to? How am I going to eat? How am I going to protect? And they tend to forget that the keys to that success is exactly what they've done on the inside, is learn their problem-solving abilities, their leadership skills, their technical components, the attitude, skill, knowledge, and experience that they brought is very transferable. And I think now we're seeing that in the younger generation, because when I was younger, my parents stayed with the same company their entire life.
Yeah.
And then Generation X, we came along and, you know, we had two or three careers. Now, there's very little allegiance to, I shouldn't say like that. I don't want to put people in. They're very committed, but the way to their future is not necessarily within the same company.
That's right.
Right? They're very finite. They're very effective. They're very efficient. There's not a lot of fat in the company. Mm-hmm. And therefore, to be able to go from one place to be able to grow within your industry, you have to go from company to company. And therefore, there's not as much loyalty, but there's commitment on that short term. But then again, I think there's a lot more younger people who are entrepreneurial because they see, oh, I was able to do this. You know, let's say I'm a underwriter or copywriter. I've worked here, worked there, my copywriting skills. Well, maybe somebody wants to hire me. They understand they value their skills more than we did because we thought that our success was attached to a company and not to the skills that we bring to the table.
That's right.
And I think you do that well with your new company is you identify people regardless of where they are on this planet. You know, what are the skill set that you can contribute to somebody who's not necessarily in the same friggin' continent,
right?
To be able to serve. And so I think I would like for you to speak because there's always a dilemma. It's funny because you get, hey, Fiverr, Upwork, you're taking, and so this is, I laugh all the time. You're taking advantage of people in the Philippines. You're taking advantage of people in India. You're taking advantage of people in Pakistan. What is your opinion? Because I'm assuming that you employ a lot of those people.
That's right. So the reason why we are so different is because, let me give you an example. Hannah is one of our team members.
Okay.
She joined my team last July.
Okay.
She's working with a client right now. The client pays us $8 an hour. She gets paid close to $14 an hour.
Okay.
And so you're like, well, Sam, like,
that doesn't make sense.
Are you running an expensive hobby or like what's going on?
I was told that you have to make more than you spend.
Yeah, you're like, Sam, doesn't make sense. Well, the reason why is because the moment a team member joins our team, they have two ways of making money. One is their hourly rate. Mm-hmm. And number two, the moment they join our team, they become a recruiter. So whoever they recruit, they get paid a percentage of that person's salary indefinitely.
Whoa.
So the moment they join our team, they can build a side passive income for themselves from day one. So that doesn't allow like that. If you're just working for somebody as an Upworker, right?
Yeah.
And working for a client, you can't have that. You don't have that. You don't have that infrastructure. You don't have the clients coming in. You don't have that job security.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first piece. And then the second piece is after 3 months, the client gets a feedback survey.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the score of the feedback survey, okay, the team member then has an opportunity to get promoted into what's called a virtual trainer. The moment they get promoted to a virtual trainer, they now get assigned campaigns that are within their scope under them. Every campaign that they get assigned to, okay, they can recruit for it, which means they make a percentage.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't necessarily have to recruit for because they might not be able to recruit in time.
Yeah.
So whoever that gets assigned to them, they also get a team member assigned under them. And they're in charge of managing them and in charge of training them. And as they do the training, they make now an additional 10% off of what that team member makes. So if you recruited that person and you train that person, you now make a huge percentage.
You're double dipping. That's so cool.
And so for the team members, like, you know, I have team members there now in the Philippines making like North American income. And so for them, it's the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
It's in our business, it's based on meritocracy. And so mm-hmm. they can come in and they can grow their income. And so that's what makes us very, very different than other companies out there when it comes to like, you know, taking advantage or whatnot, because we give everyone the same opportunity.
It for me, the thing that amazes me is my very good friend, Dominic Rubino. He's had a Filipino EA for the past, I don't know, 6 years, 7 years. And the amount of money that she makes compared to her, people tend to forget that the cost of living in other countries is so low that making $8 an hour is a very good salary.
Yeah.
Is an extremely good salary.
In fact, even in each country, there's also the areas that they make quite a bit more. And then there's also other areas, like smaller areas, that they make quite a bit less. Mm-hmm. Like you'll find that, like, for example, here in Vancouver, like Vancouver and Abbotsford, our income's the same.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not like you go to Hope and you make like half. But there in the Philippines, it's actually like that, where like in Manila versus some of the smaller towns, the income disparity, it could be quite large as well. And so, so essentially it's all based off of recruitment. It's all based off of numbers. It's all based off of, you know, who you can help. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, for me, if somebody is ready and willing to participate in the business and they feel that they're good, there is no taking advantage of. For me, that is completely atrocious and BS, because those people aren't currently or being proposed an opportunity that pre-COVID was not necessarily like Upwork and Fiverr. Yeah, that existed, but not at the same level as it is now. That's now right. You've got a global opportunity. People are used to Zoom. They're accepting virtual assistants. I mean, I've built relationship with clients in Europe that I've never met before, right?
That's right.
As much as I want to travel, as much they want to travel, we couldn't. So I've known Sergio for how long now? Through Zoom. So it's pretty cool. So yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, that's right.
So let's go back to your story. Mm-hmm. When did you go, okay, snap? So I'm like, okay, I'm done. Tell us the story of how that happened, how that went down.
Yeah. So I snapped at that meeting. At
that did meeting. You? Oh, that right there and then you said,
right there
fuck
and then
this.
Was where I was like, I'm out. And I started planning my exit as I left. And I think what's interesting is I don't tell a lot of people this, but after I left the corporate world, I actually went through a stage in my life where I struggled a little bit because I struggled with my identity, but I also struggled with like my pride. And how do I say this? It's like when I was in the corporate world, the corporate world there's a couple of different ways that they keep you. And maybe this is where I'm going to talk a little bit about like escaping the golden handcuffs, how they keep you the golden handcuffs.
Yeah.
So if you're a high performer in a corporate world, one of the first ways that they keep you is through recognition. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I know this is because I've been in back rooms before where we decided who got the award. And I've been in those conversations before. And some of those conversations sounded something like this, like, hey, we have this leader that's quite disengaged right now, and we need to re-engage that leader. So I think this person should get the award. And it's wild, some of these backroom like conversations. And so the first thing is they make you feel like a god. Like they boost you up. They say this person, you know, Sam's the greatest. And you got to meet Sam. Like, you got to go ask him for tips. And as a 22, 23 year old, that was me. Like, I like ate it up. And the thing is, it wasn't justified at all. I haven't done anything. Like, I went out, I talked to a couple of people, I did door-to-door sales, and I was good at it. That, like, I haven't done anything major. And so it created this gap in identity in myself, because as I left, I was like, who am I? Like, am I actually that good? Or was it just a fluke? Or what happened? And so, and I think so that's the first way. The second way is your leaders sometimes, I'm not going to say all, but sometimes they push you to buy things that you can't afford. And you got to be careful of that. Like, that's literally the definition of golden handcuffs, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's handcuffed because you cannot, like, you have, you know, a car payment that you cannot afford if you don't have that job. You have a mortgage payment that you can't afford if you don't have that job, right? And so when they push you to buy things that you can't afford, that's another. And I'm just saying this, like, very candidly, but these things happen in the corporate world at the highest.
So I'm not going to say, I have a very good friend, works for a company. He's the next on the list, what we call the big chair. And he was sitting with a guy who's retiring. And he said, oh, so he was looking at buying a car. And so there was a one model and there was the above model, like the one step up, right? So the trim level up. And so they're just talking and they're saying, well, okay, which car did you pick? You know, which one? That car. Which trim did you pick? Oh, he said, you should pick the other trim. With what's coming down the pipe, you're going to be able to afford that. That is so listen, so Sam and I have not talked about this before. This is not rehearsed. This is real. And I don't think that a lot of leaders don't necessarily do it intentionally. They think maybe that they're doing a good job. Hey, listen, I'm going to make Sam so much money. You know, I'm going to, but they're not playing with their money. They're playing with the company's money.
That's right.
And they're saying, Sam, you know, you should buy that car. And then all of a sudden Sam is cha-chink. Let's put another lock on his, you know, you couldn't afford that car if it wasn't for me.
That's right. That's right. And you know what? That's a good point. It's not intentionally. I don't want to throw anybody on the bus. Yeah. But what I think is this is the environment. It's like I use this analogy a lot when I'm talking about, like, salespeople and, like, the environment that you're with and the leader that's leading you. I say this analogy a lot, and it's applicable here, which is, if you take a freshwater fish and you throw it in salt water, what happens? Two things. You either adapt or you die. That's it. Those are the only two things. Those are the only two things that will happen. And so by the same logic, it's like when you're in that corporate environment, that's why I feel it's like you either sink or swim, right? Mm-hmm. You either play the game or you don't. And if you don't, you're not going to climb. You're not going to get promoted and all that. So for me, I went through a stage of just identity crisis, and I didn't really know what to do. And at one point, I actually went into a little bit of debt because I tried a couple of different projects that have failed. And and you know what? What's interesting? Now that I've gone through it, like, at one point I was like, I don't know, like, freaking, like, 30 grand in credit card debt, another like 20 grand, like, just in the shit.
Oh, that's
like,
nothing. That's nothing. I'll tell you some bigger numbers.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you got a couple years on me. So for me, like, I went through that, and I think, you know what? I think there is some sort of correlation between you being, like, down in the dumps and, like, in debt, there's some correlation to that and being successful. Because I think risk taking is based on your own personal experience. Like, mm-hmm. for me, when I was building this company, like, I took risks that if I hadn't gone through my identity crisis, went in debt and blah, 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 that I wouldn't have taken these risks. Because, like, for me, I'm like, okay, worst case scenario, I just go back to where I was, which is, I mean, like, I came through it. I didn't die. Like, you know, like, I'm fine. And so I think because of that, you know, you look for ways to solve, like, for example, I was like, I'm 60 grand in debt. You look for ways to solve a 60 grand debt instead of, like, looking for ways to, like, oh, like, save a little bit of money. Like, you can't, it's no longer, oh, what can I do? It's what can't I do? Well, I can't work a regular job to freaking pay off 60 grand in debt in, like, a short period of time. I can't. Right. So I think in that sense, like, there's correlation, like, failure and success, like, it's like designed, you know. So
necessity brings ingenuity. So you look at people who have. I grew up poor, not even poor. I couldn't even afford the R at the end of poor. I was so poor. So, but then, there's stories and stories and stories about how I was able to become a problem solver because we didn't have a lot. we used our imagination, our creativity to be able to do that. And I think that people get attached or get the handcuffs because don't we all, as entrepreneurs, and Sam, you're going to be like that. There's days you go like, fuck this, I wish I had a job. And right? And you go, oh shit, I just wish I would show up, put a bolt on to this, you know, put the nut on the bolt, just take the next one, put the nut on the bolt, and just go, boop, okay, let's go. I'm going for break. I'm going for coffee. You come back and you and then you turn it off, right? And it's just, there's days that you go, okay, there's safety in that. It's the path is defined. There's not a lot of decision making. The risk is very little. You're not responsible and accountable for a lot. But when you think about eliminating all of the gold, really, if you're healthy, you got family, right? When I left the military, one of the older warrant officers told me one thing. He says, Martin, there's three things that are very important in life. He says, physical and mental health. That's your number one priority. If you're not healthy and well, you cannot serve and protect and help the other. Number two is family and friends. So how can you be a role model if you're not healthy and mentally and physically? And so, okay, great. That's one, two. I said, what's number three? He says, every fucking thing else after that. So when you think about it, if you got one and two, so you've got you're healthy, you know, physically, spiritually, and in your mind, and you've got family and friends that care and support and vice versa. Really, you know, the added benefit, look at what you bring, because I want to bring it back to you and what you do. Because I think for such a young entrepreneur, what you solve is loyalty, is safety, is being able to transfer that one for one. For every hour work is a dollar paid, so I have to work harder to make more money, right? There's nothing wrong in working hard, but working smart and working hard is a good way of doing it.
That's right.
You're building connectivity. You're building accountability. If I'm going to bring on a team, I'm going to be accountable for that individual to perform because I don't want to lose. And again, it's not necessarily all about money, but it's about that building that consistency and that support. And I think what you're offering is grandiose and such an innovative way of building indirect income. That's fabulous. Well done.
Thank you.
So so tell us more about how did you come up with that idea?
Yeah. So came up with the idea on a plane ride.
From where to where? Like, come on, you got to put context.
Vancouver to Toronto.
Oh, that's a shitty flight. Okay, let's imagine a different one. Let's go from Taiwan to Brisbane, Australia.
That's right.
Let's make the story a little bit better.
I took if you're a Canadian, you know, I took one of those like discount airlines, and like.
Oh, yeah. You don't have to be Canadian to know that.
Yeah, true. And you know, some of those discount airlines, the seat doesn't recline.
Ryanair in Europe.
Yeah. And I was like, oh man, like, and I remember because I was right before I started this company, I was actually doing another door-to-door stint in Toronto. I was building a door-to-door sales team selling home security.
Okay.
In Toronto, door-to-door in Toronto. Just let me reiterate, okay? Door-to-door in Toronto. During COVID, this was end of 2020, okay? All right. So now that you have a little context.
That's a brave move. That's
Right. Now that you have a little context. So right before, okay, I started this company, I started in August and I built up a door-to-door sales team of around almost 60 people at the time going door-to-door, selling home security. And I remember they kept shutting us down, bringing back up because of the COVID restrictions, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And I remember I was so stressed. Mm-hmm. I was so stressed. I hated my life. And it was so cold. And for me as a leader, I don't believe in like if you're gonna lead, you gotta lead from the front, which means
that's what the leader means. Like that's to
right.
lead.
That's right. People follow you, but you gotta go somewhere for people to follow. And so I remember like because I knew I needed to lead from the front, I was still out going door to door. I repeat, during COVID in Toronto in the winter. Okay. And I remember I was like, at that time, actually, I met my current partner, like my current girlfriend, like probably in January, February-ish. And I remember this was like April. Okay. And I was in Vancouver because everything got shut down and we were a call center. So I ran it from Ontario, from Vancouver, right? Okay. And it just opened back up. So that means I had to leave this new relationship in Vancouver, okay? Like Vancouver's, like weather-wise, way better than Toronto. I had to leave Vancouver, fly to Toronto to go do door-to-door again and do a long-distance relationship with my girlfriend, newfound girlfriend, okay? And I was like, this sucks. On the plane, I remember I pulled up my notes on my freaking iPad and I started writing out ideas. I'm like, okay, what can I do? And at that time as well, like my girlfriend's a singer, songwriter, dancer. So she had a pending contract with Sony in Taiwan. So this is pre-COVID and she was going to go. So I was like, what do I do that I can work from Taiwan or work from Vancouver, work from anywhere, and that I can live a life where like I don't have to do door-to-door anymore? And so I sat down and I was like, okay, like what idea? And I started writing. And then I remember actually the idea originally came from a book that I read, which is a 4-hour work week. In that book, it talked about virtual assistant. Yeah. When I was at Ledcor, which is a construction company, I actually hired 2 virtual assistants at the time. It wasn't for a business per se. It was just to help me, right? And I remember when I was there, I actually cut my hours almost in half. I was working 80 hours a week consistently. I cut it to 40. And I was like, this is amazing, having like 2 virtual assistants that just did things for me, right? And I remember, and so that idea, I took that idea, and then I still have the notes for later on, like when I write a book or something like that. Like I still have like that exact notes. So I was writing. I landed on the idea. And the moment I landed on the idea, I started thinking about differentiating, because like I knew that the barrier of entry to this industry is actually quite low.
Yes.
Like you go online, you find a virtual assistant, you go over here, you find a person who's willing to pay a little bit higher than what the virtual assistant is willing to accept. You bridge it and then Bob's your uncle.
Then you're done.
So I started thinking about ways to like differentiate, started growing the idea. Then what I did is I called 20 of my best friends that were running their own businesses. And I was like, hey, look, if I had this idea, look, would you use it? They're like, yeah, I'd use it. I mean, $8 an hour. Yeah, I'd use it. I'm like, okay, well, we have an idea here. So then I started building out the foundation. I built out the portal, the website, the social media, blah, 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 blah. It took me 2 months, around a month and a half. Okay. Month and a half, $2,500. Why? Because I used my own service to build a business. And at that time, I didn't have a whole lot of money. So I was like, $2,500. I used my own virtual assistant to build. So like our website is built by virtual assistants. Our portal was built by virtual assistants. All the collateral online, marketing material, business cards, animated videos, like every piece of collateral. In fact, today, as it stands, even the new clients that we acquire is from our own guys doing cold calling.
That's awesome. Self-sufficient.
That's right. And when they call them, because we do cold calling for companies, that's one of the services that we provide because of my background, right? So literally the sale goes something like this, right? They get them on the phone with me. Hey, look, we can do cold calling for you for $8 an hour. They're like, oh, cool. I want to learn more. Why don't you have a conversation with our owner? Great. I get on the phone with them and I say, hey, look, like we do cold calling for $8 an hour. They're like, oh, great. I don't know if it works though. You know, do you think cold calling works? I'm like, brother, you are on a phone call with me right now because it works. I have one of my guys cold call you, remember? And then boom, that's how literally like we've been acquiring clients that way, right?
Sell me this pen.
Yeah. Right? Right? And so for me, you know, I started the idea because I basically fell in love and I was like, okay, I gotta work for it. And so essentially, you know, for me, I was like, okay, that's it. And I remember I had my first paying client end of May, beginning of June. And I left that company end of June, started full time last July. And then since then, now we're at around 75, almost 80 people on our team.
Damn. So,
Yeah, good. So that's kind of how we came about. That's the origin story.
So I usually tend to ask the question, what's the one book that changed your life? Well, I guess. So yeah. Out of the 4-hour work week, good job, Tim Ferriss. You know what? Shout out to Tim Ferriss. Because
shout out to Tim Ferriss.
I've gotten so much business from the acronym DEAL, right? Direction, Elimination, Automation, Liberation.
Yeah.
That is what operational excellence is. We create good direction. We eliminate anything and everything that's not important to the value flow to the customer. We automate as much as we can to liberate more time, to make more sales, to do more of, to be able to grow the business, right? Sure. So time or money is what you're liberating to be able to make more of.
Yeah.
And so Tim Ferriss, you know what? You know, there's nothing in my cup right now, but hey, cheers.
That's right.
Sam, what's the name of your business? What's it called?
VT Member stands for Virtual Team Member.
Okay. And VTmembers.com, I'm assuming?
VTmember.ca.
Oh, .ca. Okay. And then you service all of the planet.
I service all the planet, the entire planet.
The entire planet.
Yes.
All continents, all countries.
That's right.
Good. Can people reach out to you? You okay with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, people good. Can definitely reach out to me. Yeah.
Okay, we'll put all the details below. Perfect. So let me ask you a last question. What is your next vision? What's your next step? You've grown up. We've broken the chains. You've got your own business. Multiple business, but this is the one that you're working on.
Yeah.
What are the gears doing? What are they thinking about?
Yeah. So we are going to be the number one real estate administrative assistant company in North America. So right now we are essentially building out training that specifically trains real estate administrative assistants to help realtors. And so essentially people can hire a real estate administrative assistant from us who's already trained in all the paperwork, all the CRM, the cold calling, the social media, the transaction coordination, the whole nine.
Is that live now?
That is live. Yeah. Yeah.
I just sold my house for a whole bunch of money. Yeah, we'll introduce you to my real estate agent.
So we actually work with some of the top 1% realtors here in Vancouver right now. And we're continuously growing. You know, we're sponsoring the EXP event. I have a very good contact in the EXP Realty. Mm-hmm. And so through that, we're growing. And through that, we're gonna start off with EXP. So like literally, if you're an EXP realtor and you wanted to hire an administrative assistant, you can hire one of our assistants for $8 an hour, and they will be trained in EXP processes, EXP programs, EXP CRMs, EXP paperwork, everything, the whole nine yards. And so, you hire a local guy for like 40, 50 grand, or you hire one of our guys, which is like $8 an hour, right? So that's a comparison. And so that is going to be, what we're going to go into, because that allows me to automate more of the training, automate more of the customer service, automate more of the servicing.
Direction, elimination, and automation. Liberate the time of the real estate agent to be able to make more sales and keep more money in their pockets.
That's right. And we notice it's like, as I'm working with realtors now, it's like, you have realtors making 25, 30 transactions a year, and then you have realtors doing like 50, 40.
Oh, yeah, there's a big gap.
And then 80. But all of those, like, whatever.
They all need the same.
They're all a little bit different in what they need. Like the realtor making 20, 30 transactions, they need more lead gen. That's how they're going to get the most bang for their buck. 40 to 50, they need paperwork help and admin support. 70, 80 transactions, those guys, they need an assistant for their assistant because their assistant's swamped. So that's kind of where I see the gap.
Nice. Good needs gap. Oh, good job. Well, Sam, thank you very, very, very much for being on the show. It was, look at that. It's like 53 minutes already gone. Yeah. I think we're gonna have to do another one. We're gonna have to do a part deux for us. So Sam, thank you very, very much for being on the show. It was lovely to have you. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this one. Thank you,
thank you very much. With that being said, my name is Martin Hunter. I'm the host of What CEOs Talk About, where we translate strategy into frontline operations. Thank you very much. Please like, subscribe, and I always forget the last one. Click the bell, I think.
Comment.
All right. Thanks a lot, folks.
Thanks for tuning in to What CEOs Talk About. Make sure to click subscribe to get notified about future episodes or check us out at www.whatceostalkabout.com.